You are Locked On Balls, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, happy Thursday, everybody, and welcome into Locked On Balls, your team every day. I'm Eric Kane, the host here of Locked On Balls, at underscore Kaner, at Locked On Balls is where you can find me on Twitter. Appreciate you guys for chiming in. I love interacting with you guys here on a weekly basis. And got an exciting show coming up here today. The grades for Tennessee are in from Pro Football Focus. These are not my grades. These are from Pro Football Focus. And Rob Lewis did a great job of kind of breaking it down at VolQuest.com. You can check it out. But I'm going to go over some of the grades from PFF for Tennessee's offensive players and defensive players and how they grade them. It's a little bit unique. And I think it backs up a lot of the points that we've been making here on Locked On Vols this week following the performance from these guys against Bowling Green. So we'll do that for the offense in segment one. We'll do that for the defense in segment two. And then I stumbled across an article of some comments from Dylan Gabriel. He's UCF's quarterback, formerly coached by Josh Heupel. And according to this 24/7 Sports article from Brandon Marcello, some critical things from Gabriel to Heupel, and let's dive into that in segment number three here of a Thursday Locked On Vols. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will chat with Nick Faribault from Locked On Pitt, and we'll chat with, hopefully, VFL Ramon Foster to get you guys ready for game number two here of the season. So before we hit the ground running, let me remind you guys this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On Vols sent you. All right, so let's hit the ground running now officially here for a Thursday Locked On Vols. So Pro Football Focus, you got to play a minimum of 12 snaps to be eligible for a letter grade from Pro Football Focus. And these letter grades look like this. If you get 50 or below, you're just bad, essentially. If you get between 50 and 59, you're considered a backup. So below average starter if you get anything below 60. So from 60 to 69, you're an average starter. From 70 to 79, you're an above average starter. From 80 to 89, you're considered very good. And from 90 to 99, you are elite. So Tyon Evans graded out highest at Tennessee, 87.8, and that's the second highest Pro Football Focus grade of college football, you know, this past week. And so it was he was phenomenal. Of course, you know, had 120 yards in his first game on just 16 carries. He averaged over 7 yards a pop. He was phenomenal, and his grade reflects that at 87.8. Again, the highest or the second highest of this past week for Pro Football Focus, the college edition. So outside of Tyon Evans, Cade Mays had a respectable 78.4, and again, 78.4, that would be on the high end of an above-average starter. But outside of those two guys, the grades were not that impressive offensively, and that should come as no shock because, again, Tennessee struggled to throw the footballs for quarters 2, 3, and 4. Tennessee still could run the football with ease, but again, I think it's taken into account what Bowling Green is as well on the defensive line in that front seven. Javonte Spraggins got a 69, nice, 0.0, and again, that's just considered the tail end of an average starter, or the high end of an average starter, so he's 1 point away from being above average starter. That's pretty good from the true sophomore. Jabari Small, who I thought had a fine game, he graded out a 65.9, which isn't horrible, and that's considered an average starter. Cooper Mays was at 64.7 before he had to leave for the majority of the game at the end of the first quarter. He came back in for a series, or at least tried to, but couldn't go there in the second quarter. But Cooper Mays is at 64.7. Jalen Wright was at 61.3. I didn't think he had a particularly good game, but he didn't get a whole lot of run until later in the game. Ollie Lane was at 59.7 coming in and playing guard. And again, that's considered, right there at the upper echelon of below average starter. But then you go down, guys, and here's what's alarming. We'll get to Joe Milton in a second. Here's what's alarming, though. This is why it wasn't just Joe Milton's fault, right? This is why Josh Heupel continues to blame the entire passing game, which is wide receivers, tight ends, Joe Milton, to the offensive line at times as well. You look at these grades from Pro Football Focus from the Bowling Green game. Cedric Tillman, 59.6. Jacob Warren, 59.5. Princeton Fant, 57.1. Walker Merrill, 56.5. Valus Jones Jr., 55.5. Javonte Payton, 54.1. Okay, yeah, that's not good. That's all listed as backup quality. And so was it misalignment? Was it drops? You know, was it stuff like that? I think it's a combination of all of that as well. Jalin Hyatt, I failed to mention him. He had a score of 56.4, and of course he had two drops, both of which were pretty costly. So it's about the sum of the parts, right? So the offensive wide receivers, the tight ends really didn't do a whole lot of help for Joe Milton, who came in as a graded out at 63, which is, again, in that average starter category. Now, he missed some throws. He did not scan the field. He was inaccurate at times. I get all that. But when you put everything into kind of a blender here and you stir it, you know, Joe Milton came out better than any of his wide receivers and better than any of his tight ends. So I found that interesting there. So what does that mean moving forward? Well, it's not everything. Of course, Tennessee very vanilla on offense. We know this. Tennessee ran a whole lot out of just one formation, you know, to begin the ball game. But the test is going to be steeper against Pittsburgh. You're coming in with a very aggressive front seven. You're coming in with an inexperienced secondary, but that does bring back some cornerbacks that are going to give you some trouble. You love to blitz. Pittsburgh will blitz the crap out of Tennessee on Saturday in the Johnny Majors Classic. And so for Jerome Carvin, who had to slide down and play center, who he even admitted earlier in the week that it took him about a quarter to kind of get everything under his belt, because again, that's a big change. You're going from guard to playing center. And when you're center, you are literally setting the tone for everything. Go and get the ball, get on the football. The offense cannot get set up until you get set up. And that's what he was saying. The coaching staff was saying, hey, you need to be faster, you need to be faster, you need to be faster. All that's encompassing what this offense is. Jerome Carvin graded in the worst grade at 52.3. So if Jerome Carvin's got to go and Jerome Carvin's got to be the center this week, if Cooper Mays is unable to go, and Josh Heupel said that they're continuing to evaluate on Cooper Mays, then maybe that'll be worrisome. Or maybe Jerome Carvin will grade out higher, even though you're going up against a more experienced front seven, just because he's been the center all week. We'll have to see. But offensively, the grades, not really that great, okay? And again, these are grades from Pro Football Focus. So room for improvement, that's without a doubt, but I thought these were pretty interesting, and I thought we could talk about them here together on Locked On Vols. So let's go ahead and get into some paid sponsorships here, then we'll come back and we'll talk about the defense in segment number two. But first, Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for you or your local chain auto parts store to stock up on all the parts that you need. So why endure the often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while you see a person behind the counter going through parts on their computer, choosing only the brands and specifications that their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer, you have access to rockauto.com at home and right in your pocket. So save time and money using rockauto.com. Don't choose to spend up to 30 to 50 to even sometimes 100% more for the same parts from your chain store or your car dealership, okay? Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts to customer online for over 20 years. They do it for the professionals and the do-it-yourselfers. And the prices are always so reliably low for every single customer. They have everything you can possibly need, from brake parts to tail lamps to motor rolls, even the new carpets. So go explore their easy-to-use website today and find a solution for all of your auto parts needs. If you need to, go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit my friends at rockauto.com. Welcome back into a Thursday Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane, @_Kaner on Twitter, @LockedOnVols, getting you set for Pittsburgh, the Johnny Majors Classic. That's coming up at noon on Saturday. Tomorrow, we're going to join the brand new Locked On Pitt host, Nick Faribault, to break down that matchup. Who is Pitt? What are his thoughts on the team? I'll have two segments with Nick, and that's coming up again on Friday's show. But we're going over some of the grades handed out to Tennessee football players from Pro Football Focus following the Bowling Green game, and I think a lot of the grades here are kind of backing up my analysis and backing up a lot of your thoughts after watching that game last Thursday night. So Elijah Simmons, he comes in up top for Tennessee's defense, 92.8, and again, that is considered elite per the grading scale for Pro Football Focus. 92.8. In fact, three defensive linemen come into that elite category. Tyler Barron, 90.1. Matthew Butler, 90.0. Okay, let's go furthermore, and let's continue to go down to see how many defensive linemen are up here near the top. It's Deshaun Terry, 87.2. Caleb Tremblay, 82.1. Amari Thomas, and then there's a pretty significant drop-off. Amari Thomas is the next highest defensive lineman at 76.9. But you have three guys who were considered elite in terms of what they graded out with against Bowling Green, and Elijah Simmons at 92.8, Tyler Barron at 91, and Matthew Butler at 90.0. The newcomers, the transfers, Deshaun Terry, 87.2, Caleb Tremblay, 82.1. I mean, that's solid. That's considered an above average, or that's considered very good. You go down to Amari Thomas, and that's considered an above average starter. He comes in at 76.9. Latrell Bumpus, his first game in quite some time, at 75.4. Okay? And then you drop all the way down to 66.9. That's where Karat Garland jumped in. That's considered an average starter. Jaquan Blakely's at 63.3. Roman Harrison's at 63.2. And that's all for the defensive line. So every defensive lineman graded out is at least an average starter. That's what you want to see from Tennessee moving forward. Again, what Bowling Green's offensive line was just atrocious. A true freshman walk-on playing center. A right tackle that was playing defensive end just a couple weeks ago. The unit combined had four starts combined. I mean, it was just not good. But you got to start somewhere, okay? And if Tennessee wants to have a fighting chance on defense this year, you've got to get a push up front. Taking your gaps, taking ownership of your gap responsibilities in the run game, staying at home in the run game, also just getting after the quarterback, generating a pass rush internally to make it easier for guys like Tyler Barron and Byron Young when he gets out there, Roman Harrison from the edges. So good start from Tennessee's defensive line. It should come as no shock if you watch the game, but that kind of is what it is. Alonte Taylor, defensive back, came in at 77.4. Thought he came up and hit and tackled very, very well. You had Trayvon Flowers, who was at 73.9, which I thought was good. Theo Jackson, who had a career game, he only graded out at 69.1, which is right next door to being an above-average starter. But Theo Jackson grades in at 69.1. Jalen McCullough at a 68.1, okay? And then you had Warren Burrell at 62.7, and Kenneth George at 44.4. So Tennessee's secondary, led by Alonte Taylor, led by Trayvon Flowers, and led by Theo Jackson and Jalen McCullough, did a really, really nice job. Again, they were challenged. McDonald was throwing the football all over the place, right? Tennessee was shutting down the run. Bowling Green only had 32 yards rushing on the entire game, so McDonald was forced to pass, and that secondary stepped up, right? Again, Kenny Pickett will be much, much better, but it is what it is, okay? So the entire secondary graded out pretty well, led by Alonte Taylor. Now, Kenneth George Jr. did not grade out well. 44.4, okay? If you're below 50, you're worse than a backup according to this grading scale right now. 44.4. Kenneth George is clearly the number three cornerback right now. It was Alonte Taylor, Warren Burrell, and Kenneth George rotating the other night. How quickly can Brandon Turnage get into shape and get ready to roll and be able to take the place of Kenneth George? Can Kamal Haddon, who missed a lot of camp, take over that role? That's the question Tim Banks and Willie Martinez have right now. I mean, Kenneth George is the guy, you know, you guys have seen him play a ton of football. He's played a ton of football here at Tennessee. I'm not saying that just because you had one bad game that you need to be replaced, but I think the expectation was that Brandon Turnage would be a guy that would step up and be ready to roll and be that third option, if not a starter, at some point in his Tennessee career. One game in, we'll have to see, but Kenneth George, 44.4, a night to forget, no doubt. Now let's go to the linebackers. I graded them as a C, and I acknowledge Jeremy Banks had a standout game. I actually wrote a story about Jeremy Banks. All you guys that say I'm a hater on Jeremy Banks, I've written two stories on him so far this football season. You can check that out at VolQuest.com. Jeremy Banks led the way in terms of linebackers for Tennessee, 71.9. Again, 71, that is an above-average starter right there, but an above-average starter. I thought Jeremy Banks, who finished with three tackles, all solo, one behind the line of scrimmage for TFL, I thought he flashed. I wrote in the column that I put out earlier this morning at VolQuest.com, he saw green grass, he shot through that gap, he met the ball carrier. I thought he saw things well. Now, I think Jeremy Banks had a good start, and what Tennessee needs for him to be a good season, especially kind of leading that linebacker corps. Juwan Mitchell comes in at a 64.1. That is firmly as an average starter. Tim Banks said he probably didn't have the stats, and you guys probably didn't have the stats that you thought he was going to have, but he commanded the defense well. He didn't have any missed assignments that jump out at you. So Juwan Mitchell, though, didn't show up on film a lot for me, didn't show up in real life, firmly entrenched as a starting grade. So I think that's good, and that it's certainly not worse than I thought it might be. Then you had Solon Page III, a 58.4, and Aaron Beasley, a 52.9, both of those coming in as backup grades. So it kind of is what it is. Solon Page and Aaron Beasley and Kenneth George Jr., the three worst grades on the team, and it's not even close. The three worst grades on defense, and it's not even close, okay? So I'm really intrigued to see how long this linebacker rotation is going to last. You can do it. You can try to create depth against Bowling Green. That's fine. But, you know, against Pittsburgh this Saturday, if Juwan Mitchell and Jeremy Banks are able to go and they're your best options, they need to be out there every snap, in my opinion. But, again, I'm not a coach. I digress. We will see. But those are some of the grades from Pro Football Focus for Tennessee's defensive unit. Again, highlighted by the defensive line. Defensive line played well. The secondary overall, pretty solid grades. The linebackers, your two starters had decent grades. Your two backups didn't have great grades. But that is what week one looks like here from Pro Football Focus. If you guys like this stuff, let me know. I will be happy to spend a couple segments every single week going over the grades from Pro Football Focus when they put them out for Tennessee. I'd be happy to do that. If not, we'll skip over it and we will move on. But we will move on now here in a Thursday episode. In segment three, Dylan Gabriel, some comments about Josh Heupel and his offense and his play calling. Interesting stuff. We'll come back and chat about it in segment number three. But first, sweat block, okay? What would you want to wear? It's your little secret to confidence, and it's a must for every single person's toiletry bag. Whether it's a big presentation on Monday morning or a hot date on a Saturday night, everybody can benefit, okay? Sweatblock is doctor-created, doctor-recommended, and works up to 7 days per use. It's the dry shirt guarantee. If Sweatblock doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back, okay? It was featured on The Rachel Ray Show by Firefighters, the bestseller on Amazon for the past 10 years, over 13,000 reviews, manufactured right here in the United States. If you are struggling with the back sweat, with the pit stains, with the gut sweat, I like to call it, okay? It's a hot day. You know, we're not clear into fall just yet, okay? When you're walking from one building to the next, from one class to the next, and you don't want to sweat, Sweatblock is there to protect you. So if you or someone you love is dealing with this, you can be a little self-conscious at times, I get it, but go check it out, sweatblock.com. You can get 20% off at sweatblock.com using the promo code LOCKEDON, and you can also get it at the Amazon or your local CVS. And pro football starts tonight, guys. I've been talking about it all the last couple of weeks, okay? It's the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest. It's open now at BetOnline. For the NFL opening night super promo tonight, go to betonline.ag right now, and you can bet on the Buccaneers and the Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager is going to be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up using the promo code NFL100. Tonight's the night. Take advantage of it. If you lose, you'll get $25 back, man. That's awesome. It's that time of the year again. All eyes are pointing towards the gridiron, and betonline.ag is your number one spot for betting on college football and the NFL. Head on over to the website right now or use your mobile device and sign up today, and you'll get 100% welcome bonus. All you have to do, use that promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports, from football to basketball to boxing, right to your favorite Las Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the great offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, it's your online sportsbook experts. All right, we got a final segment left of this Thursday show. We were looking back on some grades from Pro Football Focus on the Bowling Green game for Tennessee in segments one and two. Now, let's look forward to a little bit of Pittsburgh, but more or less kind of back to Tennessee-centric in terms of Josh Heupel in this offense. Josh Heupel's offense is going to have to be innovative. It's going to have to perform well, a lot better against Pittsburgh than it did against Bowling Green, if it's going to have a chance to win this football game coming up in the Johnny Majors Classic. But I came across some comments from Josh Heupel's former quarterback in Dylan Gabriel, who is a really talented quarterback, a multi-year starting quarterback, came in when Mackenzie Milton went down back in 2018. Dylan Gabriel came in, and he's not giving it back. You know, he's a really good quarterback. I mean, he really is. And he had some comments about his former head coach and play caller, Josh Heupel, earlier in the week. So 24/7 Sports, Brandon Marcello, he spent a week behind closed doors with Gus Malzahn and the Knights. And a couple of the interviews he caught up with were really, really good. You know, this is prior to the win against Boise State last week. And one of the more telling interviews came from quarterback Dylan Gabriel. So on the offense, the differences between Gus Malzahn and Josh Heupel. Here's a quote from Gabriel to the author of the story, Marcello. We get to the line quickly, but there's a lot more in the process that goes into it rather than with hype. We line it, call it, and try to be as fast as possible. At times, it was really rushed back in 2020 because of how fast we played, so you're kind of learning on the fly with every play. You're kind of just running to grass. That is a criticism of this offense. It's been a criticism from yours truly of this offense. We talked about it on the Starting Lineup morning show on The Sports Animal as well. It's like, okay, if you're not getting anything, why don't you slow the tempo down a little bit until you get it, then speed things up. And I'm firm that that will never happen with Josh Heupel. I do not believe that will ever, ever happen with Josh Heupel. But again, the pace is, it's a pace killer in terms of, the pace is a pace killer. That makes a whole lot of sense. It's just not good for your defense when you're running out there. You're taking 112 off the clock and you're going three and out, right? It's just not good. Okay, Heupel's trying to snap the ball with 11, you know, every 11 seconds essentially. That is flying, right? And even Pat Narduzzi said earlier this week in comments leading up to this Tennessee-Pittsburgh game that, you know, contrary to him facing off with Heupel in 2018 and 2019, he thinks the offense now at Tennessee is going even faster than what it was down at UCF. And that's scary because you're just one game in, right? So it'll be interesting. Some more comments from Dylan Gabriel on Josh Heupel. Gabriel went on to note that scouting incorrectly predicted defensive looks in 8 of the 10 games, and he felt uneasy under the play calling of Heupel. I mean, why are you going off and bashing your former head coach? Number one, I mean, I have no dog in the fight here, right? I cover the team, okay? But just to be smart moving forward, Dylan Gabriel does not come across as a bright guy bashing essentially his former head coach, you know, just because you have a new regime in here. Dylan Gabriel was not happy when Josh Heupel left. The way I see it, he was hurt. He was hurt that his coach left, and now he's kind of trying to take some shots at him. I'm not even saying about the tempo and what he's saying here directly. I'm just saying the overall, I'm going to come out here and talk to a reporter. I'm going to give him quotes that I know are going to blow up about how I didn't think Josh Heupel essentially did a good job. I don't see the – that's not smart. You never know if your path will cross with Josh Heupel again, okay? Josh Heupel might be coaching in the NFL one day, and you might be playing under him. You just don't know. Again, so I just thought it was kind of silly, some of these comments I'm reading. But back to this comment, because I do think there's some truth in the matter of this. So again, Gabriel went on to note that scouting incorrectly predicted defensive looks in 8 of the 10 games. He felt uneasy about the play calling. He felt uneasy about the play calling because Josh Heupel's offense is very simplistic, okay? That's, I mean, I think pretty much everybody knows that, right? You run really only just a couple of passing plays, and it was very simplistic the other night against Bowling Green, but that can be a criticism of Josh Heupel. But also, when you come from a Jeremy Pruitt regime, when everything was so complicated defensively, I know we're talking about another side of the football here, it might be nice just to keep things simple until you get it, and then you can evolve from there. I think that's kind of the thought process with Heupel. But when Gabriel says they went into 8 of the 10 games whenever the scout report incorrectly predicted the defensive looks, now this is alarming if true. Now, you can go in and say, okay, this is what Pittsburgh has been running this year predominantly. 70% of the time, this is the front Pittsburgh's been running. 25% of the time, they'll give you this look, and then 5% of the time, they'll get in this look. Now, every football team I've been a part of, every football program I've covered, you say, this is what they've been doing, but sometimes they'll do this, they might do this. We're going to get looks at all of those during practice. Okay, my question for Dylan Gabriel would be, okay, if in 8 of the 10 games, and number one, is that hyperbole, but number two, in 8 of the 10 games, did they give you a look that at least you saw on film? Did they give you a look that at least you worked in practice a little bit? It might not have been the main look that you went against in practice or what it's shown all season long, but the look that you got in the game, was that ever shown on film or shown in practice? If not, then that's bad, okay? But I find it hard to believe, extremely hard to believe that that's the case. So in 8 of the 10 games, you're telling me the defensive front you went up against was just brand new? You had never saw anything? They were trying something new for the very first time that entire season in 8 of the 10 games for UCF last year? I'm going to call BS on this. Again, it might not have been the predominant look that you got work in on film and versus the scout team in practice that week, but I'm sure you saw that look at some point in time that year or that week in preparing for whatever game that you were going up against. So I'm going to call BS on that, but we move on. The play calling, simplistic under Josh Heupel with Gus Malzahn. Dylan Gabriel is quoted in saying that, you know, he's trying to scheme it up a little bit. He's trying to, there's a methodology behind what Gus Malzahn wants to do. Here's the quote I'm looking for. So Marcelo's quoting Gabriel and saying in 2020 against Georgia Tech, the play calls, he only threw 12-yard fallouts and verticals and a handful of out routes, okay? This is the quote from Gabriel. With Gus, I truly feel like we're scheming things up, getting into looks you like, giving you answers, and if he doesn't like the look, he checks it, which is something I like as well. And so that's a little something from Gabriel in terms of the difference. And again, Malzahn, it's been one fall camp, it's been one game. But he was one of the founding fathers of the up-tempo offense as well. But here's what Gus Malzahn had to say after the Boise State game on kind of his offense. Quote, when we had the opportunity to pace, I felt like our guys were flying around playing fast. At times, we needed to slow down. We would. I'm not a big, like, focus on have to win the time of possession, but we kept our defense off the field at times. I felt like we needed to. Every game is going to be a little different. We're going to play fast. I mean, that's who we are. But at the same time, we're going to be strategic with times we play fast and sometimes hold back. So that's the approach that I like from Gus Malzahn compared to Josh Heupel. And again, I've seen his offense one game. I'll learn more and more the more I cover this team. But I don't think you're ever holding back. I don't think you're ever trying to protect your defense late in a ball game, right? You gotta be smart. And when you know your defense is gassed, you got to take your foot off the pedal a little bit, in my opinion. But that's not Josh Heupel's offense, and I don't expect him to ever take the foot off the pedal. It's go out there, run a play, execute. You extend drives. That is, you know, that's how you're protecting your defense, by getting them more points or extending drives for them to rest a little bit easier. So I found it kind of interesting there. So nonetheless, against Bowling Green, UCF ran 88 plays for 573 yards of total offense. Tennessee against Bowling Green ran 88 plays for almost 500 yards of total offense. It's about the same through game one, right? The competition's different. I get all that. But again, some telling comments here from Dylan Gabriel, who some of these I call BS on. I don't quite believe some of the stuff he's saying, but also I do believe there is some truth to what he's saying. And at the end of the day, Gabriel's got a new head coach. Gabriel's got a new offensive mind in his ear, right? You're going to hype up your new coach, no pun intended with the hype. You're going to hype up your new coach. I mean, that's just kind of what it is. But I'm surprised that he went to the links to maybe kind of, you know, put down his former head coach. I don't know their relationship. I know Gabriel went out, you know, publicly and was not happy whenever Heupel left. Had some comments there. Maybe that's what this is. Maybe it's not. But nonetheless, I will link this article into the show notes. SB Nation, Luke Saris kind of broke it all down. But again, this is something from a report from Brandon Marcello of 24/7 Sports. So interesting stuff here. I wanted to bring it to the podcast. I had someone reach out to me on VolQuest to talk about it. At the end of the day, I think Heupel adapts to who he has. Mackenzie Milton's a better quarterback than Dylan Gabriel, in my opinion. But Gabriel has different strengths compared to Mackenzie Milton, right? I think Joe Milton, you can do so much more with him than you can do with the other two quarterbacks. But Hendon Hooker has better strengths than Joe Milton in some areas, and vice versa. Whoever you have commanding your offense, you evolve your offense and your play calling around that player to fit their strengths. I think that's what Heupel does, and I think that's one of the best things about Heupel as an offensive coach and a play caller. So we're one game into this thing. We'll continue on. I hope you enjoyed that last segment. I read this today and I'm like, man, this is interesting. What say you? Tomorrow's show, it'll be the final one of the week before Tennessee takes on Pittsburgh. We will have on VFL Ramon Foster, fingers crossed. Hopefully we'll get that lined up. And Locked On Pitt host Nick Faribault to kind of bring in and usher in some thoughts on who this Pitt team is now, who this Pitt team was, and what are the challenges that they're going to present Tennessee in the Johnny Majors Classic. So, guys, that's going to do it here for Locked On Vols today. You know the drill, Locked On Bets. Lee Sterling, your boy Q, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, Lee Sterling's Lock of the Day, all that and more, the Locked On Bets podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts. And with pro football starting tonight, might want to give that a listen before Dallas takes on Tampa Bay. Been a fun show, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will tie a bow on this week and get you set for kickoff tomorrow here for another episode of Locked On Vols. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.